a second interview with Gary Neil, National Party, Parliament House, Canberra, Wednesday, May the 31st, 1989. We're talking about the sheer size of the job and whether, in fact, we're talking about the constituency concerns, party concerns, all those sort of things, whether, in fact, Parliament, are we expecting too much of Parliament to be able to hold the executive to account? I think you're basically saying yes.
The short answer is yes. Yeah, very definitely. Of course. Here's my diary for this week. It's crazy.
Well, who ultimately then who does keep an eye on the executive? Textbooks say it's Parliament, but if Parliament can't do it, who in our system is? I mean, there's nearly 500,000 Commonwealth public servants.
Well, nobody does, apart from looking at the Parliament does. And I'm, you know, as I probably told you, one of my problems is all the committees and public accounts. I've possibly spoken about this in an earlier talk, but, you know, the report put in by the Public Accounts Committee as a result of the Auditor General's, I thought it was excellent. I can say I wasn't part of that particular inquiry. That particular section or group. But I've just been, is it today? I've been to the first meeting, yes, of another parliamentary committee that I'm on, which is the Industry, Science and Technology. No, I haven't. The meeting's tomorrow. I had a briefing from the secretary because it must be put on.
Well, is this one of the new general purpose committees they set up in 87?
Yeah. It's a House of Reps standing committee. And
are you engaged in those committees in scrutiny? Obviously, legislation doesn't go to them. Or are you engaged in long-term issue?
I think, here's a couple. That's the mine countermeasures. His personal wastage. This is from the defence subcommittees of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade. The IST, which is the one that was had a briefing on this morning, is looking at investment. I forget the exact title of it. I've only seen it once, so I haven't committed it to memory. It was to do with the investment in the North West Shelf project. So that, you know, you're looking at a whole range of things.
You're basically looking at things down the track. You're not looking at this what the executive's doing now.
No,
scrutiny.
No, not at all.
It's issues.
And who knows? You know, you might pick something up. Some people might. In all parties, and I would think that there's a pretty fair spread across all party lines that members think that the executive, and this is even from Labor Party people, that the executive should be scrutinised.
Oh, the Labor people have said that just as strongly as opposition.
Yeah, and you see it coming through, and I think this is one of the good things about our committee system, is that by and large, you do get a very bipartisan approach, and people are there. With some exceptions, they're not there to score points.
Do you think, though, that talking about the scrutiny and how big it is, do you think some of the committees, rather than this long-term stuff, should they be looking at what's happening now in legislation, legislative committees?
Well, you know, the parties do that. But in terms of current legislation, I know the Senate's got a review of, or scrutiny of bills committee. Did it happen? I'm just telling you.
Yeah, it's still there.
Which obviously does that in greater detail. You know, theoretically, the parties in this place, in the House of Reps, have the obligation, and they do. The shadow ministers go through. You've got backbench policy committees. I'm chairman of our Business, Industry and Science one, and we look at legislation.
I just wonder how effective that is. I mean, I have shadow ministers who say if they're lucky, they get one extra staff member.
They sometimes get
5 or 6 hours' notice from the minister of massive legislation. Brown, for instance, saying Bowen drops anymore, or John Moore, 280 amendments he's got to be up on top of by first thing in the morning, this sort of thing. Yeah. That's the shadow minister who should be on top of. What hopes of drawing back once you've got?
None whatsoever.
With stacks of legislation coming.
None whatsoever.
So through the parties then, we can't really rely on that either.
No.
Legislative scrutiny.
No, we can't. But that's where it should be taking place.
Yeah.
But of course, with the time. Restraints that are imposed sometimes, problems. Mm. And of course, you know, the number of extra staff. Mm. Well, I don't have enough staff just as a backbencher. Mm. I really don't. Not to service that electorate as I would want to service it in terms of the demands that we have. And I'm sure I've said in our earlier talk, you know, that you're an ombudsman and you're consultant on immigration and social security and all the rest of it.
Well, you mentioned before about the public accounts one, which got some publicity recently, the one that Rob Ticknor's chairman of. Now, I saw in the paper there that he said two-thirds of the departments had failed to comply with the annual report guidelines.
That's right.
Now, if that, to me, two-thirds is an astounding number. Does that indicate a disregard for Parliament by the bureaucracy?
I don't know whether that particular or specific thing indicates that, but I would accept the general premise. I think the bureaucracy disregards Parliament.
Mm.
I don't, apart from that one, I just can't produce evidence. I think Parliament is regarded as a bit of a nuisance.
Well, I just wonder what sorts of things could be done to make it work better.
I don't know. I haven't got time to think.
Mm.
I say that quite seriously and quite sincerely. And again, I just looked at that diary. I've got, if you just look over the next few days, I've got John Stone coming for three functions over the weekend. He arrives Saturday morning, we'll do some media. We've got a dinner in Nambucca Heads, breakfast at my home on Sunday morning. We've got a garden party down south of Kempston on Sunday afternoon. I go back to Coffs Harbour for 21st birthday. Kempston, the office in Kempston Monday night. Port Macquarie in the morning on Tuesday to deliver a speech on defence and to the Air Force Association. Show slides on China, Stewart's Point Senior Citizen on Wednesday. Get to Canberra that night, go on the Tasman Link fire demonstration in an hour, get back to Coffs that night, speak to Provis Friday.
No.
Of course, even for instance where there's just one entry for the day so far, you've got 4 hours driving for a start.
Well, I wonder if that's the case and if we should be looking outside Parliament for the scrutiny.
Perhaps.
Freedom of Information, Ombudsman's Office. Minister of Appeals Tribunal, the Auditor General, which I think your committee is trying to get into the Parliament. Are we relying more and more on sort of extra parliamentary scrutiny?
Well, we're not relying because it's not there. Perhaps we should ask you if you say that. One of my thing that really eats me is that it's very difficult to be a parliamentarian. Time and time again, you go into that chamber when the division bells ring, and people on all sides, of all parties, say, what are we voting on? What are we voting on? Don't have a vote. And while I don't suggest that we should all have to follow what's going on, every second, every word, every mouth, every speech, I'd prefer to be more aware. In fact, I find out what's happened in the House of Reps today while looking at the Australian Mail tomorrow.
So constituency concerns, your party concerns and all the other stuff that goes with it.
Party is the least of it, in my terms anyway.
But with all that, your parliamentary role as a parliamentarian and things that theoretically Parliament should do, it's just so difficult to do.
It's well nigh impossible to do it properly. It really is.
Well, just if I move on to another area, I'm not sure, I don't think we got up to it last time. Your views on the new building, whether you think it'll make any difference?
I think that, I think it makes it harder. In fact, I'm sure we spoke about it, because I said that I made the point in the old place. You were far more often to see the Prime Minister or anybody in the corridor. So you could say, can I see you about such and such, and get that personal contact. Or you could just knock on, going past, put your head on the door, there's Peter Morris there. He's front desk lady is Sheila. Sheila, any chance of a word with Peter? She goes, I'll wait for translation, so that doesn't happen. You've got to make an expedition.
Mm. And that'll make the executive more powerful, again.
Yeah, of course.
Well, another area, I'm not sure if I rose or not, party discipline.
No, I don't think you did.
That's one of the reasons held up as to why the executive is so powerful, particularly in the House of Representatives, where the executive knows that they can always get it through because they can crack the whip, the numbers come through. And a lot of people I've spoken to have different views on it, but most people agree we've got probably the tightest discipline in the comparable countries. Do you think there's a need or an argument for lessening the discipline?
Well, it varies depending on which side of the house you sit on, and whether you're in government or opposition. Discipline is much easier to relax in opposition than in government. If you're in government, you've got to maintain the numbers all the time, and you can't allow... And certainly, Labor, although Labor relaxed, you know, Graham Campbell...
His punishment seemed a lot less than I thought it would have.
Yeah, you'd expect them to get what George has gotten out. Well, if you went back 10 years ago, there wouldn't have been any debate or discussion. You'd have been expelled straight away. On our side, there's certainly more freedom. And we've seen the Rucks and the Publics and McKellars across the floor just this year. And not vote strictly according to the party line. Now, whether that would happen in government, I don't know. I would hope that the possibility would be there. But I don't know just how it works in the Labor Party here, but I know, for instance, in New Zealand, I'm not quoting the exact figures, but it's sort of, they've got about, let's say, 48 or 52 or something like that, and they've got just three less than a majority in the cabinet. So all they've got to do is get three of the backbench, and they've got the numbers for whatever cabinet. So you've got 25 in cabinet, so all you need in cabinet is 13. That gives you the numbers, and then you need cabinet solidarity, then imposes that decision, and you need three backbenches. So that in the New Zealand case, 16 people run and control the whole, or can. I think that's a pretty fair analogy. How it applies here, I've never heard it, but certainly the New Zealand Labor Party government that they have now, it's true.
Would you ever, if you felt strongly about an issue, would you hesitate to cross the floor if it went against your party?
No, if given the right, sure, I've run across the floor, yes. Knowing that I have the opportunity to do that. Go back even to old Davy Drummond.
Probably Davey. No,
who was a member for New England before Ian Sinclair, and a former Minister for Education in the State Government. He was incidental in establishing the Armidale Teachers College and the University College. And Davy Drummond came here, and I couldn't call him crossing the floor. I guess, with my mob, if you did it too often, people say, hey, you sure you still want to be part of the National Party? But it can happen, and it happened with the wheat. Evan Adam and Clary Miller. Peter Fisher. And nobody holds it against them. We accept that it was important to them. And I think if we were in government, it meant that the government was defeated. I think it was a different issue.
Would it make any difference, though, in government if they weren't defeated? Would that matter if, and even if they were, would it really matter to governments? If it, well, assuming it's not a financial bill, would it matter if a government got rolled?
Well, the next division would be all right, wouldn't it? I don't know, has that ever happened?
No, I don't think the government's got, although Cathy Sullivan did tell me this morning that she thought in 61, 63, when Menzies only had majority of one, a couple of times they got rolled on the floor. I'm not sure what issues or whatever.
So they were defeated on that issue rather than being defeated as a government?
Oh yeah, defeated on that issue. I mean, obviously you wouldn't vote to defeat your government if it was that important and the government fell. But would it matter if across the floor and the government lost a few things here and there?
Well, my straightforward answer was no, I don't think it would matter. But I'm sure that the party organisation, the party room, and the executive, I think whichever party it is, that it would be extremely important.
Yeah.
But to me personally, no. Mm. I would see that as a benefit, an extension of our democracy. Mm.
You think this will never be lessened in Australia?
No, I don't.
It seems to be the same answer.
No.
Seemed very strong here to start. Well, another area I'm not sure that we covered or not was the role of the Senate. Have you got a view on the importance of the Senate in the parliamentary system?
Yes, I think the Senate is absolutely vital. And when I'm talking about in my electorate, I give three examples even since I've been here. I point to the Veterans Affairs Bill, which in 86 the government just slashed to pieces and presented a completely new ball game while Geitzel, the minister, was out of the country even. And it was the Senate who put the sunset clause in that enabled veterans' facilities and services to be reinstated. Look at that was 86 and 87. I'm sorry, that was 85. Mm-hmm. And 80, what was it? 80. Yeah, I'm really tired. But anyway, 1 year.
Yeah.
We had that. The next year we had the Bill of Rights, where the action of the Senate stopped it. And then we had the Identity Card. Mm. And again the Senate. And if the Senate did nothing else from Federation until now, stop the Identity Card and the Bill of Rights, it's worth all its pay for 90 years.
Where do you actually draw the line though between so a government that gets elected in the lower house, it's the numbers there, that's where governments are made. And what is an appropriate role for the Senate? I mean, what should, I mean, how far
I think,
can
I think
it go?
Money bills, budget bills should go through, should not be stopped. Mm.
But apart from that, anything else is reasonable?
I think it's fair game. Mm. It is the house of review. Mm. And I know that when we get back into government, we are probably not going to have control of the Senate.
I don't think anyone will.
But as far as I'm concerned, tough titty. That's, we'll have to wear it in government as well as benefiting from it in opposition because it's in the interest of the people of Australia. I'm sounding as though I'm pontificating.
No, that's all right.
But I really believe that.
Yeah. Well, I've raised that issue with some of the ministers I've spoken to too. And it's I mean, what you or I might see as scrutiny, someone else would see as obstruction.
Oh, that's bloody-minded obstruction.
Yeah, it's difficult to always do that. But the minister I spoke to last night said, I said, do you see any legitimate scrutiny going on in the Senate? And he said, no, it's 100% party political. The scrutiny is not necessarily for the good of the people or for legitimate scrutiny. It's seen to score points off the government in the hope that we can win the next election. Now, what would you comment on that?
Well, I suppose it could be true.
Given the parties are so important in this building.
I guess it certainly could be true. I'd like to hope that it wasn't. Mm.
I mean, there'd obviously be times where if the governments haven't got the numbers there and there's a party, the opposition are determined to get into government, if they can continue to embarrass, they're not doing it for the good of the veterans or for the good of the pensioners or whatever. They're doing it just to be...
I suppose in reality it's got to be a bit of a mix.
Yeah.
And certainly there is points scoring just as there is over there. Yeah. But I think without having had the opportunity or the time to make any sort of analysis of it, just the gut reaction is that the amendments put forward by the Senate by and large. I really
well, I must say quite a few of the Labor people have agreed with that view.
And I think that the... Well, I haven't actually been. I would like to go and sit in on some Senate estimates committee hearings. I've never once done it. But I believe, from what I've heard, that the work done on the estimates committees can be very, very useful. I think, for instance, if you just look at the Aboriginal one, last year. I'm sure Charles Perkins doesn't think so. Jerry Hand doesn't think so. I think that a lot of the searching and probing there, while not very pleasant for some people, but you've got to have thick hearts. I don't know if you saw what some bloke wrote about me in the Australian this morning.
I did actually, about question time yesterday.
Yeah. Which I think was totally unfair.
It was Bill Goff, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I know Bill. He used to work for Dortmund.
Uh-huh.
And before that, AFB.
Right.
He's a reasonable sort of a fellow, actually.
Yeah. But I think he was a bit unfair and unkind. Mm. But that's beside the point. Mm. It just proves the point that you've got to have a thick heart.
Mm.
And, for instance, Hand, I think, has performed very well. Under a great deal of attack.
He certainly genuinely has got the interest of the Aboriginals at heart, isn't he? But they, it's a difficult job.
A good job. But I still think, leaving all that aside, that the work that was done there, for political point scoring, if you like, did do some good, and that it exposed things that needed to be exposed.
Certainly a lot of shortcomings in their bureaucracy there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But again, a lot of people I've spoken to, that one's come up again. They say, look, it's political grandstanding by Chapman, Tambling, and those sort of people. Other people said, no, it's been legitimate scrutiny. Probably the answer is a mixture of two. Just on question time, then, that's one I've asked a lot of people, and that's the one that does get a lot of media coverage. Do you think question time could be improved?
Yes, I think there should be a limited time for ministers answering questions. Probably get this as a unified or united opposition. A unified opposition comment, but I honestly believe that it's true that even today, there are a few statements made, not just answers to questions. But I think that there should be a time limit for questions, and if there's not sufficient time for the minister to say what he wants, he should make it a supplementary statement.
One of the ministers I've spoken to said it's a waste of time, question time. As a scrutiny function, he said it's just a joke. And he would like to see the British system where they're rostered on, prime ministers on every second Friday, whatever. And, they actually can get stuck right in with supplementaries. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't know about the rostering on. I think that's one way for... No, I think ministers should be there on that. But supplementaries, yes, I believe there should be the opportunity for supplementaries.
Where's the fault lie at the moment?
What prompted me with the interjection yesterday was the Prime Minister's answer, and I've looked at it since, also later on, since in reference to the question. Mm. And we have a track record in recent years of ministers technically and deliberately not answering questions. I personally would far prefer to have the answer that you get occasionally, look, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. I'll contact my department, I'll get it for you and get to know later today. Whereas to stand up and just bumble and carry on with a load of bull with political point scoring, I think there's a great scope for change in question time.
What about the role in parent speaking? It's obviously an office creature of the executive. Should they be more independent?
I think they should be much more independent. I think in the British system, the speaker doesn't go to
party meetings.
I think that should be the case here. It should be divorced from party organisation.
Yeah, a lot of people agree with that too.
I think the role of speaker is a very, very difficult one. Certainly a lot of aberrations. Won't be more critical than that, but there are a lot of aberrations, and I can understand why there would be. But there's a specific, I definitely believe the speaker should, once elected speaker, should be independent of the party.
Okay, we might finish there.
Because I've got